This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run continues. Julian Han and myself, Sharad. Just a quick reminder that after the 8 o'clock news, we'll have the breakfast grill and we'll be speaking about that big confab that's happening now in the state of Florida in the United States between Xi Jinping and Donald Trump. Leaders of the world's two largest economies as well as military powers of the Pacific. As our guest, we have Elena Noor. She's the Director of Foreign Policy and Security Studies at ISIS. Her colleague, Bud Nagara, a senior fellow there, as well as Dr. Lee Min Jiang, Associate Professor at the Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore. All of them will be coming on after the 8 o'clock news. Now, coming back to the business stories that are, causing us a lot of concern and perhaps excitement, Maybank sees better asset quality in the first quarter, in the financial year, rather, 2017.
Yeah, so essentially, Maybank, sorry.
Close.
Oh, wow. It's a Friday, people. All right, so Maybank had their press conference after their AGM yesterday. So essentially, providing an outlook for what's to come between now and December 31st of this year. Now, so on one hand, yeah, they're trying to portray this picture that they have a bullish outlook, that their performance, their sustainability will be on par, if not better, than their peers. But at the same time, they did raise some cause for concerns, though, and one being what's happening in the oil and gas space. They seem to be labeling it as a stress situation. And when we see what's happened with Ezra and Swiber down in Singapore, one has to wonder, and what the fallout from Ezra and Swiber did to Singapore-based banks. Now with comments like this from Maybank saying that they're watching out for the oil and gas players as a stress situation, really does pose some serious questions here.
Yeah, I think the sense of concern there is very much palpable by the kind of statements that's coming out of the Maybank people. But one has to know that Maybank is an extremely stable bank with huge number of assets and a kind of legacy provisions that have been built up over the years that would enable their balance sheet and their profit and loss account to take some hits here and there. And in an oil and gas sector, they've cited that there might be still problematic there. But next year onwards, these are essentially how they're going to deal with some bad loans and where they're going to take the provisions out of. I think that it was mentioned that they can take this out of the balance sheet so that it doesn't hit the profit and loss account.
Correct. So essentially what Maybank has done is they have restructured and rescheduled some of what they call their vulnerable loans. All right. And so the idea is this, if these customers who have these these vulnerable customers, if they can continue to perform over 6 months, then Maybank can take these customers off from their impairments. But as it stands, they have had to accommodate for more impairments and more provisions, for loan provisions for potentially non-performing loans moving forward. To quote the Maybank chairman, they are preparing for the worst, but they are hoping for the best. I know, as cliche as that sounds.
Yes, nice.
RSPO of the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil sees opportunities in the European Union's strictest measures. Apparently, they see the positive side of things and they believe that there'll be opportunities for the palm oil sector despite these measures on imports.
So reading this kind of news reports, once again highlights the continuous evolution of what the market demands in the palm oil space. Again, keeping in mind, Malaysia is one of the top two, besides us and Indonesia, we are the top two producers of palm oil in the world, right? So these kind of developments is certainly something that we have to watch out for. Palm oil accounted for almost 10% of all our exports in February. So just to give you some numbers here, RSPO, that's the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil. They intend to boost, what's more environmentally friendly, or as they call it, certified sustainable palm oil to 90%, because right now it's only at 21%. So that's a lot more ways to go and a lot more, evolution that is required by palm oil players.
Yeah, but I think the RSPO here is also trying to sell themselves to the European Union. because the EU is really worried about indiscriminate deforestation, and they want to control that and only source from certified sustainable planting. And this is where RSPO says they can come in and play a role in that, in helping the EU. Of course, that would mean keeping to standards, right? The RSPO is selling a kind of standards to be kept to.
I just want to ask, you know, we have had because that story of our engagement with India and the Indian economy, and India wants to buy more of our palm oil. Does India have or have the same high standards? And what is it? What happens when, you know, you have different markets making different demands? And some of these demands, as you rightly put out, Julian, are very important. It's good for us that we are pushing towards sustainable, agriculture
exactly.
in palm oil.
Exactly. I think it's also a question of representation. Here, who is a stronger representation? Is it the consumers who are demanding palm oil, consuming palm oil, or is it the rest of us, and sometimes we wear two hats as well, the rest of us who still want our forests, and whether the question of whether we can give up biofuels for that. So going back to the EU, right, you have India and China who are big consumers, and then the EU also want to be careful about what they consume so that it doesn't harm the forest. And you have this whole issue of biofuel, which the EU will ban and want to ban. And CIMB actually estimates that there are about 3.3 million tons of palm oil right now that could be affected. That's about 5% of total palm oil output. So it is this extra superfluous production that is being made to put into your vehicles that's the Europeans are worried about. And come back to this question of representation. Are we worried about forests, or do we want to fulfill consumptive demand?
Sure. Now, at the same time, if going back to Sharad's point about the balance of power, so to speak, between the EU and India when it comes
as
to...
As markets. Yeah.
Right, as markets. You know, and that's a very valid point there. So with India, India is actually the world's largest importer of palm oil. The EU is second. But for Malaysia's story alone, it's the reverse. The EU is the biggest, India is second. So nevertheless, you know, these are still very, very comparable markets here. And you're right, you know, who do we ultimately pander to, assuming that, you know, they are wanting different forms of palm oil? Again, I'm no expert in that, but I would think that India would not say no to, what is certified sustainable palm oil.
Okay, also we have in the news Malaysian millennials. Apparently, they have the fourth highest level of home ownership for their peer group. This is a survey conducted by HSBC. It says that Malaysian millennials actually have the highest, as you said, the fourth highest. And as a comparison, Australia and the United Arab Emirates, or UAE, have ranked at the bottom of the list. So the question is, why are we so high, and is this a good thing?
Well, I mean, okay.
Well, I have a more fundamental question. Why is this survey even done? Because we know that millennials can't afford homes, right? And I'm just wondering about the Malaysian number, because I'm just wondering how much of that dough came from the parents.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
Mommy and daddy
bought you an apartment.
All right. As the only millennial on the mic in this room here, let me...
Are you?
Yeah. On the mic.
Are you a millennial?
Okay,
really?
Well, yeah, you know, according to this survey, dude, I'm not that old, Lawe. Come on, la. Oh, sure. Okay, so according to this survey by HSBC, these millennials are those aged between 19 and 36. So, yes, Julian, I do fall in that category.
Okay.
Thank
right.
you very much.
It's all a matter of definition. Slightly RSPO as well. Whose standards are going to be they abide by, right? Because the Malaysian Palm Oil Board have got their own standards.
Right.
As well.
Well, we do have another millennial in the room, but he's not on the mic right now. But nevertheless, you know, so I mean, to be fair, these are only just 9 countries that HSBC surveyed. Let me just go through the list real quick. China, Mexico, France, Malaysia, US, Canada, UK, Australia, and the UAE. You know, so I mean, to say that it's all daddy-o and mummy-o's money. Money, I mean, come on, like, give us a bit more credit here, people.
No, but why are you doing this survey? For whom? Are you doing this survey? I think it's just for the banks to see how much loans that they can give out to house
buyers. Right, potential for growth, right?
The problem If you go back to the issue of home ownership, I mean, it's a really big problem because we know that a lot of people can't afford their homes. And on the property show today, in fact, we're discussing the idea of industrialized building systems where these are Lego blocks manufactured somewhere and then transported to the property site so that you can reduce property prices. I mean, these are the kinds of issues that we're discussing. The survey really handles the kind of hashtag first world problem issues. We are seeing that doesn't really concern us.
Yeah, I mean, also for us in the Klang Valley, I mean, maybe the issue is where you own a home. People might want aspirational locations and districts or neighborhoods, but there are probably a lot of affordable homes down, you know, way past Nilai 1, 2, and 3 that millennials can still buy into. It's just a question of what they aspire to.
They can buy a home there. They just would have a really bad career.
Or a long commute. And right. A long commute is quite normal in many countries, especially developing countries.
Right. And I think, the reason I chose this story is because I think it highlights two things. And Shira, you hit the nail on the head there. You know, one of these key points being it's a matter of choice, right? You know, you choose whether you want that home or you want to hold out for that home in the Klang Valley. Or if your sole goal, at least investment-wise, is to own a home, no matter where it is, then you buy that home in Nilai and then you make that long commute. It is a personal choice.
I find it hard to look that in straight in the eye and buy into it because
I'm not saying it's an easy choice, but it's a choice, right?
A lot of times it's a false choice because structurally the system has been rigged against you. I mean, if you had to live in Nilai and work in KL, that means other costs, you know, investing into a motor vehicle to drive, to transport you from point A to point B, and that might be costly for you, not to mention all the social costs of time lost in that commute. I don't know if that's a real choice.
Well, but I mean, it is a choice nonetheless. I mean, I'm not saying it's an easy choice. Now, the other aspect of this story real quick is basically to set the context here. You know, if we are already suffering, you know, consider spread a thought for the millennials in Australia because they are, you know, second to last in this survey here. Also, keeping in mind how our home prices in Australia has risen the most in 7 years, all right? So maybe giving you some context there, global context.
A conversation that will continue post the 8 o'clock news bulletin coming out right now, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.